And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this is a pretty good week coming up, because on Thursday, according to Janet Yellen, the government of the United States is going to go broke. At that moment, the Treasury is going to be bare. All the things that the Congress voted that the federal bureaucracy should spend money on, they didn't bother to appropriate for, and the federal government went and spent the money, and now they can't pay the bill. And the Republicans refused to come up with the cash. So the government will go broke if they don't come up with the cash. Of course, the fancy word for this is raise the debt ceiling. But what we're talking about is they ran through what was in the bank account because the Congress told them to do it. The Republicans told them to do it. And now the Republicans say, oh, we're not going to put up the cash. We're not going to pay for it. What do you think about that? Isn't that responsible?
Well, it's typical of the Republicans. We've been down this road before, and it's always backfired on the Republicans. They've shut down the government. And it goes back to Newt Gingrich, if I remember. And then it happened again, about 20 years ago or 10 years ago, 11 years ago. And every time.
Yeah, when Obama was president, sure.
Yeah. The Republicans lose votes in elections because of this stuff. But they keep trying. And
What is it they're trying to do?
Well, what they're trying to do is undo the things that have helped people all along. Their ultimate goal is to get rid of things like Social Security and Medicare, and then lower taxes on the wealthy, who then use the money to finance. To give to them to finance their campaigns so they can get reelected, so they can lower taxes again on the wealthy. It's wash, rinse, repeat, the same cycle over and over again. And I talk about thinking long term. This is their long term thinking.
They don't make any bones about it, right? They've been talking about this for a long time. I mean, it can't be anybody's surprise that they're going to default or going to threaten to default.
Right.
They boast about it.
Yeah, and they try to package it as a good thing.
Yeah.
We're doing this in order to get rid of all this excess spending that the government does.
Excess spending. What Nobel Prize winner Paul Krugman pointed out was that the consequence of not borrowing the money to pay the debt that you've already, to pay back what you've already bought, not doing that means the only way that you can stay afloat, cut Medicaid, cut Medicare, cut Social Security. There's no other way. The arithmetic doesn't work anyway except if you do that. Right. And they may say, no, they're going to protect Medicare, they're going to protect Social Security. It can't be done. If they're serious about not paying the bills that they ran up, the only way to keep the government running, keep the army running. And by the way, the troops don't get paid. If the government defaults, the troops don't get paid. Social Security checks don't get cut. Credit card interest rates go up. Mortgage rate of interest goes up. It's a disaster. Yeah. It's a complete disaster, but only for working people.
Only for working people. Yeah, but they
But if all working people stop buying, then don't investors lose out in the end if they can't sell what they've invested in producing?
Well, that's the thing that they don't work through, because it's never happened. But, you throw us into a recession and businesses go out of business, and all those small businessmen that they say that they're for go out of business, and then they think we can fool people again,
But they do fool them again, because these small businessmen continue to support these Republicans.
Right. They think it's going to happen to someone else. They think that they're sticking it to other people. And, you know, I was reading this week about, there was an article in the New York Times, Bret Stephens and David Brooks discussing the Republican Party that they no longer recognize. And
that they both were members of, that they were both active members of.
Right. And I think it was David Brooks talked about back in the 80s, there were two groups, the Reagan Republicans that those guys identified with, who wanted to, they believed in government, but a smaller government and doing the general economic things that Republicans do. And in the other group, they mentioned Laura Ingraham by name, who really were just opposed to liberalism. You know, they weren't for anything. They were just against stuff. And now they're reaping the consequences of that. Trumpism is really being against things more than you're for things. And the one thing that, and it's morphed, it's gotten distorted by a guy like Steve Bannon, who wants to tear the whole thing down. He's a nihilist.
But he doesn't suggest what he wants to erect.
Well, he thinks that it can just run itself. It's a power play, you know. If you're rich and you're powerful, you don't need this stuff. You hire your own private security, and you go off on your yachts. And you remember he was arrested on a yacht from a Chinese businessman, you know. Right. He I don't think he has a family. You just do your own thing and let the rest of the world suffer and pretend you don't see it.
Well, I think they don't see it. I mean, I don't really think they understand how the system that they support works.
Well, some of them don't care. A lot of them don't care.
I think a lot of them don't care. That's right. It doesn't matter. As long as they have a short-term view, as long as it works through their lifetime, what the hell's the difference afterwards? They're not here.
Yeah. Well, they have a long-term vision to keep working this until they get it. But then they have a short-term view of the consequences. That's the dichotomy that goes on.
I think that people don't grasp how ignorant most of these leaders are. They may be dumb. That's one thing. But whether or not they're dumb, they're definitely ignorant. They have blinkered, one-sided views of what they're involved in. And they seem not to be able to grasp what they really are involved in. I mean, you can't imagine that a guy like, well, for example, Kissinger. Kissinger is hardly a liberal. Kissinger was a guy who thought deeply about how to maintain a capitalist system with American hegemony throughout the world so that it would last. And he tried to figure out a way to coerce other countries and what he needed in terms of military strength and what he needed, therefore, in terms of economic strength, so that the group that he was fronting for would continue in the long term. And he was attacked by people who said, we don't want to do that. And his argument was, well, what else were you going to do? How else are you going to make it work? And they didn't answer him.
Realpolitik.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Real politics. This is really how it works. They don't quite grasp what needs to be done. Now you can say, well, the whole thing ought to be swept aside. That's a separate matter.
Yeah.
They don't have that point of view. They think it should continue, but they don't seem to have any notion of how to make it continue.
Well, I've kind of divided the groups into two groups. The group that understands and knows better but still takes on these policies or these advocacies. And then you have another group that really doesn't get it, they buy into this stuff, but they have no concept of what it really is doing. And unfortunately, I think what we've seen in you used to have what I guess they called them adults, but you had people who in the Congress in both parties, but let's talk about the Republican Party since we are that they understood process, they understood how things worked, and their leadership. You might not agree with them, but Paul Ryan wasn't a stupid person. Eric Cantor wasn't a stupid person. But now you've got people in Congress that are just clueless. Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz. Paul Gosar. You used to have a small number of the crazies, the Louis Gohmerts. And what was that guy, Yoho down in Florida? But now you've got a whole throng of them in the Congress, and they're just concerned about getting themselves reelected and getting themselves on Fox TV and what have you, and no concept of how they could be bringing the whole thing down.
Well,
then you have some, I'll give you an example.
If they could really bring it down, I'd support them, but they can't even do that effectively.
Yeah. I was, this week I was, listening to an interview with the New Hampshire governor, Chris Sununu, who is very popular in his state. He decided not to run for the Senate. He didn't want part of Washington at this point, but he has an eye on maybe running for president or something. And he's bragging about the fact that in New Hampshire, they don't have state sales tax. They don't have an estate tax. They don't have this kind of property tax. They don't have this. They don't have that. And, I'm thinking to myself, the interviewer never asks him, well, how many aircraft carriers does the New Hampshire Navy have? How many people have the New Hampshire Medicare system? All of these things they don't have in New Hampshire. And Sununu knows this. I mean, he realizes why they don't have taxes and what they're not providing. But there are other people who would listen to this and say, hey, that sounds pretty good. Well, let's get rid of all the taxes. And they still think that things can run without this stuff. That's the difference in things.
And that's what you have with the MAGA people. The MAGA people are basically libertarians who want to have an authoritarian government against liberals. Now, you can't have a libertarian government that's a strong government, because that's a contradiction. Libertarianism is no government, no regulation. They seem to think that Mussolini's concept of fascism, or Hitler's concept of fascism, or Horthy's concept of fascism, was an aberration, because in all of those, in the standard concept of fascism, you have a strong state. Well, you have to have a strong state, because the whole point of fascism is to make sure that the working class doesn't organize itself. And in order to make sure that the working class doesn't organize itself, you have to at least make sure that they have health care, that they have some place to live, and so that there is a social welfare component to fascism to prevent the working class from becoming independently organized. These people think they can get away with it.
Yeah, but they have to be careful. They don't want any institutional organization that can gain a power base. They have to keep anything that's there. They have to keep it weak.
They have to control it. But but these American people, they don't quite grasp that. They think, like this guy in Wisconsin who was gloating last week. You told me about this fellow gloating last week that they were able to. He was happy because in Michigan they were able to keep
Milwaukee.
Oh, in Milwaukee they were able to keep the number of Hispanic and African American voters 37,000 less than normally voted through various tricks. Right.
Right.
That's a Pyrrhic victory.
Yeah.
If you manage to convince most people that there's no point in voting, they'll do something else.
Yeah, I keep quoting my guru on fascism, authoritarianism, Ruth Ben-Ghiat, the professor from NYU, and she said the new model. Don't forget, after Hitler and Mussolini got in charge, they stopped having elections. the new model is to have elections, but to control the elections, to suppress enough of the opposition that you can't really, that you can say, I was elected, but like you said, it's a Pyrrhic election.
So it's a fraudulent election. Yeah,
it's a fraudulent election.
Yeah. Well, we're close to that. In a situation where money talks, that's where we are.
Well, she calls that the Orban model. That what you do is you jail your opponents like Orban or Putin mm-hmm. does and or Erdogan mm-hmm. does, or you use the mechanisms of the state. You take over the communications of the state, and then you're able to convince people over a period of time, again, longer period of time, that this is the way that things should be. Because you suppress any alternate ideas.
And that lasts for a generation. But, at some point, it doesn't last. At some point, new people get born who look around and say, forget about it. We're not having this.
But in the meantime, there's a lot of damage that's done.
A lot of damage. And in the meantime, those people who did it, they died. And they managed to live their lives on top, oppressing everybody else. They're happy. They succeeded.
Well, that's the theory of Tom Hartman about the of these leaders who are sociopathic.
I think they're all sociopathic. I think all of these right wing groups are sociopathic.
Yeah, and business, and he translates that into corporate leaders. We saw this week now that Pfizer, and I think Moderna as well, but Pfizer is now going to raise the price of vaccines by a multiple.
Yes, the federal government is paying $26 a dose for the anti-COVID vaccine, and they're going to put it on the market for $130 a dose.
Right, right.
It probably costs 25 cents to make.
Yeah.
And the government paid for the research.
Yeah, well, Bernie Sanders sent a letter saying that. We gave you billions of dollars to do the research and to buy this stuff, and then you want to gouge the American public. It's shades of Martin Shkreli,
But these guys are doing it legally. Shkreli did it illegally. They're doing it so-called legally.
Because, the Wall Street guys, this is good business. The only thing we care about is profits for the shareholders, and nobody else counts. Your customers don't count. The public good doesn't count. That kind of thing,
But that is the financial model of a fascist state. You get the taxpayers to take the risk, and then you turn the profits over to the favored group that's in the elite. That is what fascism does. And it maintains that system through military and police repression. That's why you can't have elections. That's in the simplest terms, that's fascism.
Yeah. Now the one thing that we're seeing evolve in the United States, and again, Ruth Ben-Ghiat talks about this, is the private militias that are going around now, and it's not a central organization, but you're seeing this. We're seeing this with the people who are shooting and putting out substations that produce electricity. In the Northwest.
And for some reason, nobody can figure out who they are.
Right.
The police are omniscient, except when it comes to finding out things like this.
And then they've got the what would happen in Michigan, where this private militia, so to speak. If you remember, once they invaded the legislature there. But then you had this group that wanted to kidnap the governor, put her on trial, and execute her publicly. They were convicted, but
and you know what their defense was? That they were goofy.
First Amendment.
That they were goofy.
Goofy, yeah.
They were goofy.
Yeah. We just talk about these things.
Yeah.
We don't talk about. And there is some contrast. There's a lot of talk about, after January 6th, what's taking so long to get at the real persons behind this. The January 6th committee did a really good job of explaining what happened, but they didn't go after who financed this, who was behind all of this stuff.
Yeah, well, Mastriano spent how many buses from Pennsylvania? Who paid for the buses?
Yeah. And
why isn't he in jail? He organized the buses. Put him in jail.
He might be. Isn't he one of the phony electors?
He may be. He might be. Yeah.
I think he was one of the phony electors, and that's.
But as you were pointing out, in Brazil, they didn't waste any time at all. They went after the Mastrianis in Brazil.
Right. And they had the same problem in Brazil as the people are talking about here, that some of the people that are supposed to protect, you know, the people in the government or the military, or in our case, the Secret Service, may have been in cahoots with, or at least in sympathy with the insurrectionists, the seditionists.
Well, in Brazil, it was clear that they were in cahoots because it's come out. They appointed this guy to be the head of security in Brasilia, the capital, and his first thing was he demobilized the security force.
Yeah, you know the thing was, in Brazil, they went after the Supreme Court as well, but and I guess they have different laws or whatever. But the Chief Justice of Brazil issued some arrest warrants or whatever. I guess he had the power to do that, and he wasn't taking it laying down. He went right after them, which is sort of, you know, if you remember on January 7th, Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy were blaming Trump. And all of a sudden, you know, 2 weeks later, McCarthy's down in Mar-a-Lago kissing Trump's ring. That's a big difference. That's a big difference in people who really want, you know, to or recognize the danger of this to the democracy, and people who just think that they can manipulate the democracy in a way that only benefits them.
But you know that Steve Bannon spent several years, after he was forced out of the White House, he spent several years organizing internationally. He went to Europe.
Viktor Orban.
He went to Italy. He went to Scandinavia. He helped all of these fascist groups get organized. There is a fascist international. They do meet. They do coordinate.
And Bannon spent much of his daily show encouraging the Brazilians to believe that Bolsonaro really won the election, that it was a stolen election.
Same script. Same thing. The machines were compromised. The voting machines. Yeah.
Yep. Well. We'll see. Meanwhile, that Dominion suit goes on and on. We'll see how that comes in. And then again, then you get the what it devolves into eventually is something like George Santos.
My favorite politician. Poster child of politics.
Yeah. But, you know,
if politics hadn't become a hobby, a guy like George Santos could never have been elected. Even if the Republican Party, if the Democratic Party were actually somehow representative of a social stratum, if they had any kind of internal democratic functioning, a guy like Santos couldn't emerge. Other people, other types could emerge that would be reprehensible, but not these personal grifters.
Yeah, you know, the old party boss system, for however many faults it may have had, a guy like George Santos would never, you know, never see the light of day.
No, what would happen would be, you know the name Abner Mikva, right?
Yes.
Abner Mikva was a congressman, and then he became a judge, but he was a Chicago politician who was a long-time leader of the liberal faction of the Chicago Democratic Party, an opponent of the Daily Machine. Well, he told a story about when he got into politics. The dailies were still running, had already Chicago. Taken over in Chicago. And he wanted to get into politics. He was a young guy. So he went to they had ward organizations, neighborhood organizations. So he went to his local neighborhood organization, and literally there was a locked door. He knocked on the door. Somebody comes to the door, and he says, I came to, what do you want? He says, I came to volunteer for the campaign. The guy says to him, who sent you? Mikva says, nobody sent me. The guy says to him, we don't want nobody, nobody sent. That's how it worked.
Right.
Santos couldn't have gotten anywhere. Now, you may say, well, why is the Daily Machine, you know, better? Well, it's not better. It's just different. It's just a different form of corruption and crookedness. But this kind of two-bit crookedness is already more embarrassing than the well-organized crookedness of the dailies. To me, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Well,
I wanted to know, and I want to ask you this, is I think George Santos actually got elected. Legitimately. It's just I think the guy who showed up is not George Santos.
Well, that, you know, that would be an interesting book to write or an expose to go after. whatever. I did want to mention something about Pennsylvania before we leave this week. There was a significant development. The Commonwealth Court, which handles matters involving the government, voted this week to hold all three vacancy elections in the Pennsylvania State House on February 7th.
That's big news. That's very important. You should explain that.
Yeah. As we've said before, the Democrats won 102 elections, 102, which gives them a majority of the 203 members of the state house. But there's three vacancies because one died and two went to higher office. Austin Davis became the lieutenant governor. Summer Lee became a congresswoman. That temporarily gives the Republicans a 101-99 advantage. And they wanted to stretch the elections out. One election they have to have on February 7th, the one that the person died. But the other, that would still keep the Republicans in a majority. The other two, they wanted to hold during the spring election primaries in May.
And the reason for that was what?
So they could pass ballot initiatives to change the Pennsylvania Constitution in three areas. One is on voter ID. One was on extending the statute of limitations on sexual abuse. And the other was to allow the legislature to overrule an executive branch regulation. And now they may not have time to do it. The Pennsylvania State Senate voted this week. They have to run through two consecutive sessions. The same bill has to pass both houses. It's not vetoed by the governor. It doesn't go to the governor. It goes immediately to ballot. So it's passed one set, and this is the second round now. The state Senate voted for this, but the state House hasn't. And we have a speaker who was elected by a cooperative between the state Senate and between the Republicans and the Democrats. And the question is, will he bring it up? He's under attack because he supposedly promised the Republicans, the 16 in leadership that voted for him, that he would change his affiliation from Democrat to independent. He said he was going to, and he hasn't done that. So we don't know what kind of pressures are going to be on him. But if they don't bring up this bill by February 7th and the Democrats win these elections as expected, that agenda is dead for this session of the legislature. And then they would have to start all over again when a new state Senate and state House are elected in 2 years.
Well, in other words, they got 3 weeks.
We got 3 weeks. And by the way, February 7th is going to be the State of the Union address.
All right. Well, we have no more time.
All right. So, as we march towards February 7th. This is Martin Luther King weekend.
Right.
I'm not sure that what people can say about it in places like Texas or Florida.
Not allowed to say anything about it.
Yeah.
Not allowed to.
Yeah. So
with that, we stop talking.
Okay. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.